There's a pretty good chance that your doctor has mentioned at some point the value of taking some additional vitamin D. The vitamin we get from sunshine has lots of uses in the body. And research shows that additional doses of vitamin D in pregnant women may help those women prevent going into labor and delivering their babies early. But you won't see that information on the label of a vitamin D package. So people are asking the Federal Food and Drug Administration, FDA, to include the information on the label, including the person you'll meet now. Karen Howard is the executive director at the Organic and Natural Health Association. Karen, thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
My pleasure to be with you.
Boy, there's no shortage of Google hits for vitamin D and preemies together. Has this been studied for a long time?
It has. There's a significant body of research, and just recently the developments that have been worked on at the Medical University of South Carolina have really issued some startling results in terms of what your blood level is for vitamin D and your rate of preterm birth rates.
So even aside from this particular claim for vitamin D, is vitamin D just having a big moment in history? I mean, the claims about its benefits go way beyond just this realm of premature birth.
It goes so far beyond that, and the reality is despite all the coverage, you actually are seeing an increase in rickets in the country, which is the one thing that everyone can agree upon when it comes to vitamin D, is that it reduces the rate of rickets. So it's really epidemic, with 90% of the population being deficient, and then with African Americans almost 100%, which one would ask, how do you know what's deficient? And I think that is really one of the stumbling blocks, is that practitioners all over the country are measuring vitamin D, but aren't necessarily doing anything to help people get a vitamin D level that is sufficient to keep them in a healthy place and enjoy the actual results of having that vitamin D level, which we have seen in research is between 40 and 60 nanograms per milliliter.
So rickets used to happen to kids in deep valleys that didn't get a lot of sunshine. I mean, we don't live in those conditions here generally. What is the theory on why the cases of rickets are taking off?
If you look at our lifestyle, we really don't spend a lot of time in the sun. Generally speaking, we're all fairly work-bound on the inside of buildings. And to be able to get enough sunshine, which is the best way to get vitamin D, you need to be out with a significant portion of your skin exposed for white skin 3 times a week, 30 minutes a day at peak time. And if that isn't enough, we have really created a culture of fear around the sun, and everyone is slathered in sunscreen from the minute they walk out until the minute they go back inside. So we're really not giving our bodies a chance to be able to manufacture that vitamin D from the sun, and it's just increasing the rate of deficiency, not just here, but even in subtropical climates.
Ah, so our use of sunblock also blocks the vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's amazing. So I mean, does medical science even agree at this point on what the logical levels of vitamin D in the body should be?
It's interesting that you ask. When the Institutes of Medicine put out recommendations, they made a mathematical error. So all of our practitioners are, and they have admitted this publicly, all of our practitioners are wandering around saying that if you have a level of around 20 to 25, maybe even 30, that it's sufficiently, it's a sufficient level, and you really don't need much more than 60 IUs a day, international units. And what the research that has been done in a population of more than 12,000 people over a series of years has borne out is that you really see the benefits when you get to that 40 to 60 nanograms per milliliter. And that's when you'll be able to enjoy the benefits of vitamin D, whether it's for seasonal affective disorder, reducing your risk of colds and viruses in the winter, and certainly now with preterm birth, and we're even learning now with rates of cancer. So that research has been going on for a long time, and now we're pushing it out into the public domain. We have a great website, nutrientpower.org, that teaches people all about all the nutrients we're deficient in. Most what we're focused on right now, of course, is the vitamin D issue with preterm birth, but we've also added an omega-3 to what we're working on.
So nutrientpower.org is a chance to, do you look at tables or do you enter some information of your own, or how does that work?
So there's a great little calculator, because the other thing is if you don't know your vitamin D level, you can probably ask your practitioner. And then the question becomes, how much vitamin D do I take to get to that level? So you really have to monitor it on a regular basis, at least once a year, if not twice a month. So we have the calculator on our website, nutrientpower.org, and the ability for individuals, this is crowdsourced research, to participate in this very broad-based nutrient field trial, people all over the country. And that way you can monitor your own levels, and you can watch your health respond to that over time. just in relationship to your own personal health, as a part of the larger cohort, and in relationship to national standards. So it's really useful, very personalized response to a large research project.
Karen Howard, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the executive director of the Organic and Natural Health Association, which is asking the FDA to put some more information on the labels for vitamin D. We'll get further into why in just a few moments. You can join us here on the Exchange with your questions and comments at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. And feel free to share stories about how much vitamin D your doctor has you taking, because it seems like they're asking us to take more these days. Join us again at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. So let's talk about the premature birth effect and the particular effect that we believe vitamin D possesses here.
Right. So it's, you know, I don't know if people are really aware. 1,000 babies are born a day in North America prematurely.
How many? I'm sorry, we had a cell phone fade. What was the number?
A 1,000 a day. Wow. In North America, babies are born prematurely. And it's at a cost for the United States of $12 billion. Mm-hmm. So it is a very significant cost issue, but it's also a very painful issue for families to deal with. And the disparity that we see with preterm birth rates, I have to say, Oregon gets an A. It's one of the very few states in the world that does. But the disparity that we see is with people who have darker skin color. And it's so easy to eliminate that disparity by getting that vitamin D birth rate up that it's really criminal that people don't have this data at their fingertips. So that's where we're really focused in terms of how we can easily reduce at a very low cost. It costs $100 for a woman to take vitamin D through her entire pregnancy versus someone who's at risk who's taking a $50,000 shot, which most of the time doesn't work either. So for us, it's just a very pragmatic, easy solution set. And at the Medical University of South Carolina, they've now implemented a program where every OBGYN, OB patient that comes in the doors has their vitamin D level monitored. It's been that impactful. So it changes the way healthcare is delivered.
Are there other studies to back up what the Medical University of South Carolina has done?
There are other studies. There are some clinical trials, which is what everyone supposes is the gold standard for this. This is really breakthrough in terms of actually being able to take what we know from the clinical trials and then implement it with a large population. And this has been, now it's being expanded across the country. It's in one other site in South Carolina. Several other healthcare organizations are bringing this on because they're seeing change right before their eyes, and you can see it very quickly in the pregnant population because it's a limited time, limited situation. So you're not waiting 2 to 3 years and then being able to analyze. You're really seeing it in real time, and that's having a dramatic impact on how healthcare is delivered.
So when in pregnancy is the additional dosage of vitamin D recommended?
It varies from person to person. So a lot of people, and this is part of the reason for monitoring on a regular level. So these women have their vitamin D levels measured every quarter. And depending on, not so much what you eat, because you really can't eat your way to a healthy vitamin D level, but just basically on the color of your skin, the level of what you need to take to get to a sufficient dose, to get to that 40 to 60 varies by person. That's why it's important to really monitor it. So as myself, when I discovered my deficiency, I started taking 2,000 IUs. I bumped that up to 5,000 a day, especially in the winter. So mine is up at that almost 60 level. Versus someone else who may have started at a very low level, around 8, 10, or something like that, who may get even higher doses in the thousands, and they're watching that. It's almost impossible, and there were no adverse outcomes associated with too high a level of dosage in the program. But it's really about knowing what your level is so that you can adjust as you move forward.
But that's a good question right there. I mean, we all learned in junior high, in my case, the deficiency diseases that you get by not having enough of a vitamin. Rickets, obviously, with the bendable bones, if you don't have enough vitamin D. But can you take too much of any of these vitamins, and vitamin D in particular?
Like I said, there were no detectable adverse events related to this project in South Carolina, and certainly the only adverse that reports that we've seen is you have to have your vitamin D level at over 100, 110 before you really see that. And the other nutrients do impact this as well. So a lot of people will have struggle in terms of getting their vitamin D level up, which could be associated with a deficiency in another nutrient. So that's why it's really important to monitor this. But you have to work incredibly hard to be able to get too high a dose of vitamin D.
You mentioned you can't eat your way to a healthy vitamin D level. I mean, what foods other than the vitamin D added milk and stuff contain vitamin D?
Oh, well, so we're fortified with vitamin D in milk and a couple other places, and you can get it in great fish, but you cannot get the dosage that you really need. You don't get enough IUs to make a difference just by food. Your body is really built, with your largest organ being your skin, to take that sunlight and convert it into vitamin D. So it's just not an efficient solution set, although it's something that is measured in the study in terms of what people do consume. I'll give you an example. When a new baby is born, that new baby gets 400 IUs of vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the recommended level for all of us. So you can see that if a baby needs 400 IUs of vitamin D, what in the world are we doing taking 400 and 600 IUs of vitamin D every day? So there's where some of that disparity comes in, and you just can't rely. You can definitely say omega-3. If you're a great fish eater, certainly you can see that in the rates of omega-3 levels in Alaska, because it's culturally built, designed that way. You can have a great omega-3 level. You just can't. You can't eat enough of these foods. You would have to be eating tons of certain kinds of leafy greens to be able to get that done.
Karen Howard, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Executive Director of the Organic and Natural Health Association. We're talking about the benefits of vitamin D and its apparent effects showing up in research to reduce the incidence of premature birth, and the petition to the FDA to get that information put on vitamin D labels. You can join the conversation on the Exchange with your questions and comments. 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So the effort with the FDA, what you're asking is for the FDA to allow vitamin D labels to point out the possible benefit for in potential premature births?
Absolutely. There are very few health claims associated with dietary supplements. One of them happens to be vitamin D when combined with calcium to prevent osteoporosis. So what we're saying is and it's a difficult threshold of proof for them to review, is to say the body of evidence is significant and substantial enough to warrant a health claim. So it's a big lift for all of us to, one, prepare the documentation for it to go in. It's about a foot tall. And then for them to be able to review it and open it up for comment. So we are just in the beginning stages of that process.
Well, we're talking a foot tall stack of documents?
12 inches of paper that are the collective body of research to support what the claim that we want is.
Wow. So I'm not familiar with this process. I mean, how carefully is the wording scrutinized? How long a process does this figure to be, Karen?
It can be a very long process. It will depend on the original review by the agency, when they'll come back and they'll either open it up for comment for the general public, or they'll actually issue a proposed rule, which will also be open to the public for comment. So that would be the most wonderful scenario, if they believed that everything was as it should be and they actually issued a rule for how to use the claim. I'm anticipating that there will be much conversation before that decision is reached. We do not, you know, this is a new concept. It's a new way of looking at healthcare. It's an additional and, we think, final step for a research methodology to be proven before you go to a health claim. And we're anticipating lots of dialogue and hopefully lots of support from the public and other agencies.
So you filed the petition on March 28th. I mean, does it get printed in the Federal Register that it was filed, and then that starts a process of input and paperwork and all that stuff?
We have received notification that it's been filed. We anticipate going in a meeting with the agency soon to explain our position, and then at some point it will be posted live on the Internet for everyone to see. I'm not sure when that will be yet.
Now, a couple weeks after the filing, you met with some representatives from Congress, too. Who were some of the people you talked to?
We've talked to a lot of people from all different sectors. We took a small group, very kind of rifle shot, to make sure that we were hitting the right places. One of the places that we focused on was obviously South Carolina, mm-hmm. Where this research was done. But we've also met with some of our, you know, great stakeholders in Washington State and other places, Arizona. The vitamin D deficiency doesn't seem to discriminate in terms of how much sun you get. So we've generated at least 900 letters to Congress on this thus far, and we know that we have five or six members committed already to writing letters to the FDA in support of it.
All right, I was going to ask you if some of them have agreed to send letters, and the answer is yes. So five or six of them so far. With all of the benefits that attach to vitamin D, and I can speak with some recognition of the situation on this because both my wife and myself have gotten urgings from our doctor to go ahead and keep bumping up the vitamin D levels. We could end up with a fairly long label here, couldn't we?
There will be guidelines if we can get that far that will show that, you know, what can be said, how to say it. I think they always take that into consideration in terms of what's useful for consumers to hear. Some of this language and the way it's written is kind of prescribed by the regulatory process itself. But the reality is that if we have the ability to communicate this on the internet and elsewhere, we know that additional health systems and consumers primarily will push for this with their practitioners, and that we'll be able to get insurers to pay more attention to it, and this will get out a lot faster.
Have not asked about the sources of vitamin D when we get it in those little capsules. I mean, we know we get it from the sun and some dietary sources you mentioned, but when you take it in little capsules, where does that stuff come from?
Well, it's vitamin D3. Generally speaking, it has two sources. It can be completely synthetic, or it can be from lanolin, and that's really what you want to do. You want to do D3. D2 is a plant-based option. Generally interested in vegetarians often do that. The Amazon D product happens to be a D2, but the research around the effectiveness of D2 versus 3 is not very good. So I always encourage people to find a D3. It's inexpensive. It seems to be effective in almost every form if it's D3, and it's just generally one of those great supplements that isn't very expensive and you don't have to really worry too much about with quality.
Okay, again,
it's actually kind of a commodity.
A commodity.
So, nobody's making any money on selling vitamin D.
Ah, that was one of the questions coming up. But but you are at the Organic and Natural Health Association, so there's certain processes in preparing vitamin D that makes it either more wholesome or more effective?
Yes, we do. We're very sensitive to the issues around the supply chain, so much so that we've actually instituted a glyphosate testing program to make sure that Roundup isn't getting in the supply chain of our members. So you may have the best quality lanolin-based D3 product in the world, and if those in your capsule has somehow been contaminated with glyphosate, you would want to know that. So that's how particular we are. Now, and what we can do is service sort of the industry gold standard in that regard in terms of, you know, setting an expectation and meeting consumers' expectation that our members are really committed to the quality of the supply chain. So nothing is ever, you know, 100% free risk. And testing can only be as good as the day that you do it, but that is the attestation that our members sign before they before they join, so that we know that they're aspiring to be the best they can, organic to the extent possible, and certainly GMO-free.
Vitamin D and its preventive properties in research about premature birth, a discussion topic here on The Exchange with Karen Howard, the Executive Director of the Organic and Natural Health Association. Questions, comments, couple minutes left. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned lanolin as a source of D3. I know one source of lanolin being sheep. Are there others?
Sheep is the one that I'm most familiar with. That's the one that I see used the most often.
Mm-hmm. We had a question dropped off about the relationship between cholesterol and vitamin D. Is there any research there?
I have seen some preliminary research that in terms of heart health, that certainly with cholesterol levels, vitamin D helps. I suspect today, I mean, we are literally going to, our goal is to do this with 15 different nutrients. I think it's always good to remind ourselves that nutrients do not function in the body like a foreign agent or a pharmaceutical would. So there's many things that will impact the effectiveness of vitamin D in relationship to any of the situations we're talking about. And that's one of the things that we're looking at. That with cholesterol and heart health, we're already seeing some preliminary research coming back about how omega-3 and vitamin D work together to support that. So that's what I'm most interested in, is in terms of not just taking vitamin D, omega-3, because somebody says it's good for you for X, Y, and Z, but then being able to show through real-life circumstances how that works.
I know the March of Dimes brought in some numbers that you had quoted in your work about the annual cost of preterm births in the United States at $12 billion. So, how big an impact do we think vitamin D could have in reducing that number?
Well, we know that not all preterm births are related to low vitamin D, but we also know that you can reduce preterm birth rates by 60% in the population if you have that 40 to 60 level. So let's just say we reduced it by 50% across the board. We'd already be saving $6 billion a year and really giving an entire generation a better start than what they've been handed.
I wonder, Karen, about the regulatory environment at this moment in history. If dealing with the FDA under President Trump is wholly different from dealing with the FDA under President Obama.
Very interesting question. The new commissioner, Dr. Gottlieb, has actually come out and stated that we need to look at nutrition in a different way in terms of preventing disease. His view of nutrition is food. We're anxious to hear how closely he will parallel food with dietary supplementation, since it is actually one and the same. So I think there's an opening there in an agency that whose mission has primarily been safety, not health. And I think we forget that on a regular basis. But when you look at the E. coli breakout and you look at all the measures FDA has to manage around food safety now with the new Food Safety Modernization Act, et cetera, the time and attention on health and true prevention has really paralyzed our entire healthcare system. So we're actually looking for a new paradigm of thinking. And however that comes to be under whatever administration, or if not the administration, by virtue of the fact that so many of us out there are actually living our lives this way, health systems are looking for ways to save money and make this work, because it hasn't happened thus far.
So we're talking about action ahead of the need for it, potentially. I mean, and getting people to do things before their health needs dictate that they need to do something.
Right. And I think people are looking for that. They're looking in and even improving health status and not using all the pharmaceuticals that we have at our disposal. So I talk to people every day. I'm sure you hear from them, all your listeners, who are really interested in what they can do to make sure that they stay healthy or that they can maintain the health that they have. And they are looking for options, and they're looking to whole foods, and they're looking to other ways, like, you know, wow, is it true that vitamin D could actually get rid of X, Y, or Z for me? And we're seeing really incredible results.
Do you think a year, a couple of years for this process to play out?
You know, I hope not. To me, we just don't have that kind of time. I have a sense of urgency about this. And yet, if it takes us a year or two and we are successful at shifting an agency's thinking like the FDA, I'll consider that a major success. In the meantime, we're going full steam ahead and talking to as many people as we can, and we were actually hands-on with babies and with everybody else.
All right, vitamin D as a possible prevention for premature birth being touted by the Organic and Natural Health Association to the FDA. Karen Howard is the executive director of the ONHA. Thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Take care.